It's June 14th, 2022, Abhayagiri Monastery and Longpo Sumedho gave a Dhamma teaching earlier today. And I thought that was a really amazing Dhamma talk. And there's so much there to contemplate, to think about. Longpo Sumedho talks about awareness so much. Awareness is always here. And then in my mind, I'm kind of this juxtaposition with just the difficulties in the trying to lead the Dhamma life. And especially those of us who live in the monastery, we go day by day. There's not that many distractions. We do our korwat. We go to morning and evening pujas and have our meal. The breakfast, we had a special breakfast this morning, but that doesn't happen that often. So usually it's just a breakfast of oatmeal, cereal, pretty basic. And then the meal. And then the tea time. The tea time tends to not be so interesting. It's just we have a drink, and sometimes there might be some sort of allowables. It's not generally considered that interesting. We do our meditation practice, look after the facilities. We do sitting, walking meditation, sweeping, broom making. We fix things up. So looking from the outside, that can seem like a pretty boring life. Why would anybody want to do this? Some people here might know the biographies or the histories of some of the monks here. You did all those fun things before. Why did you give it all up to ordain? Why would you do that? What would make you want to do that? Give up all those fun things that you used to do to lead this very seemingly boring, meaningless life. Longpo Sumedho was talking a lot about the four requisites in his talk today. He really touched on almost everything, actually, in his talk today and bringing it back to awareness. But he was talking about the four requisites and contentment, and these basic requisites, and awareness. So we can easily get in a rut where our practice can stagnate, especially after a longer period of time when living in the monastery starts to become normal for us. So at first we might feel very inspired coming to the monastery. We might feel very inspired. I'm very inspired right now though. There's older generation mixed with newer generation here currently. And I find that very inspiring that people are still drawn here from all generations. There's even people here who met and knew, lived with Longpo Cha. So I was 12 when Longpo Cha passed away. I'm 41 now. The day Longpo Sumedho arrived, he arrived and, of course, looking very bright, and we took him over to Sandivihara. And he sat down in his room where he's staying now, and he said, "Nyanako, I'm here to teach you about aging." And then now he keeps making little comments here and there. Went over to pick him up yesterday because he was meeting with just the resident lay people here. And I kind of stumbled a little bit when helped him put his shoes on, and then I kind of almost tripped and fell, and I said, "Oh, Longpo, I almost fell." And he said, "You're too young to fall." But But it's so amazing seeing someone who's older, like Lumbar Sumedho, reflect on aging. Because this is what we do as monks. We contemplate aging. We contemplate death. Then you see the fruits of the practice. So he's talking about awareness, and we can stagnate in our practice because the life here, we're just doing the same thing day in, day out. It might be kind of interesting to go somewhere and do a road trip and go see something, but then it's like you come back to the monastery and it's just more of the same routines, the same activities, the same mealtime. And it's very controlled, and it can be a very tight container, so it brings up these irritations. And we actually, you might, the lay people, the lay community here might see us as just a group of guys who stumbled into the monastery, and that is kind of how I view myself, actually. I'm just some guy who stumbled in off the street. And now I'm the abbot of the monastery. But then the awareness, so whether our practice is stagnating or whether it's going well, the awareness is always there through the whole time. That's something that the awareness is the very thing that allows us to experience life. And the awareness is, it's a very subtle and profound thing that the awareness is always there, and it is our very nature in terms of what allows us to experience things, and it is the animating force and what gives us that life experience. And at the same time, there's suffering. So how are those two things related? And I think I like to think of this as the knowing, but the knowing is hidden, or it's not purified. So the whole practice is a purification of the knowing, or a purification of, or an uncovering of awareness. Of course, awareness itself is intrinsically pure and unsullied. But how do we uncover that? How do we realize that? And it's always there. It's that intrinsic purity is always there, but it's covered over. So currently, when it's covered over, or we say there's defilement present, and therefore there's suffering. So the awareness currently, when it's not purified, then it's going out the eye, it's going out the ear, it's going out the nose, it's going out the tongue, going out the body, and going out the mind itself to mental objects, to thoughts. So it's constantly going out to these six sense bases. Eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind as the sixth. So the word in Pali for this is vijnana. In Thai, they say vijnan. So vijnana. Jnana means knowing or inherent wisdom, unconditioned. Jnana by itself is like the Sanskrit is, it's with a G, like gnosis, like the word gnosis comes from jnana. But when you add the vit in the front of it, it's divided knowing. So the word for consciousness in terms of the five khandhas is divided knowing. Divided knowing, knowing out the eye, knowing out the ear, knowing out the nose, knowing out the tongue, knowing out the body, knowing out the mind. The eye sees forms, visual forms. The ear hears sounds. The nose smells odors. The tongue tastes. The body senses tactile sensations. And the mind comes into contact with thoughts, mental objects, ideas. So that's the six sense bases and the six sense consciousnesses, the vijnana. But then what is that that's going out, or what is that that is able to even do that, even able to experience through those six sense bases? How is that even possible? So there's awareness or experience there. So for now, we think of consciousness as vijnana, or as divided knowing. And then when we think, it's always around those first five. Any thought we form, it's either a thought of a sight, a thought of a sound, a thought of a smell, a thought of a taste, a thought of a tactile sensation on the body. So can you have just a thought that isn't based on those first five, and you can try it out for a moment? Can you have a thought that's not a word? Usually our thoughts are formed in forms of words, so that's sound. Can you have a thought? A thought is either a visual, we might visualize something, that would be a visual, a thought based in visual objects. A thought might come up in the form of words or talking to somebody. That's sound, that's thought in the form of sound. We might actually think of an odor that's a bit more subtle, but we can actually recollect a smell or be reminded of a smell. Taste, we might think of a taste, we might think of a good taste that we want. We might think of, day after Wanpra, and then on the day after Wanpra, there's going to be bread breakfast, and there might be a good taste that I like. So we might think about a taste. Then we might think about tactile sensation. We might be able to create that in the form of a thought. But then a thought, just a thought, what is that if it's just a thought, not based in any of those things? Can anybody do it? It's not so easy, but it's a good contemplation. I actually think of this as you have this Hui Neng, the sixth patriarch of Chinese Buddhism. He says, he was reading the Heart Sutra, or a particular rendition of it, which says, produce a thought nowhere supported. So can you produce a thought that's nowhere supported by sight, sound, smell, taste, or touch? Can you produce a thought that's nowhere supported? And if you can, then that's an awakening, if we can do that. So this just comes full circle back to the Noble Eightfold Path and the practice, and it's getting the mind, the citta, to that point where it can let go. It can let go into that. My guess is if you're able to do that, it's going to be silence. Yeah, the mind will be silent. So this is just the practice. It's not necessarily interesting or fun, but just contemplating this awareness, it can lead to a sense of quietude, a sense of peace. A sense of contentment, a sense of not wanting anything. In Thai, they would say maknoi sundot, which means fewness of wishes and contentment. So in order to get more in tune with that awareness, and Lungpa Samedo, he's very humble, so he doesn't talk about his own practice very much. He talks about his own mistakes, his own foibles, but he doesn't really tell you how hard he was practicing when he was at Wat Nong Pa Pong. You have to actually go to Thailand or talk to people who knew him at that time when he was living with Lompo Cha at Wat Nong Bapong to know how hard he was practicing, how difficult it was to get into this touch, into touch with this awareness, and to actually have these realizations. Now he can speak about it freely and openly. Now he can speak about it freely and openly just from experience, and we might think, ah, you know, why can't I just get there, just get that? So for someone who's practiced, the practice becomes internalized. The training, when you become well-trained in something, then it's automatic. You become well-trained in awareness, then it's automatic. That coming back to that realization. The eye won't attach to forms, the ear won't attach to sounds, and so on. The mind won't be stuck, it won't go out because there's not clinging, there's not attachment. So that means to get to that awareness, to get to that sense of freedom and spaciousness, there has to be a lessening of attachment, a lessening of clinging, clinging to sights, clinging to sounds, and so on. So it takes a lot of practice. But then when we see someone who's trained for a long time, then it seems like, oh, they make it look easy. We have a band saw in our workshop, and band saw blades are folded in a certain way that you have to like do this motion to like fold them into like three circles. It's sort of the way you store them. And then there's a particular motion that you unfold them so it doesn't pop open and cut you, which can be dangerous. And so I was trying to look up a tutorial video about how to do this, and found this guy, and he gives workshops and teaches about, one of the things he teaches is how to unfurl and fold up these bandsaw blades. And I've always thought, there must be some sort of technique to this. And he's doing it, and he's like, okay, if you do this and this, then it just opens. He said, it's so easy, it doesn't even take any practice. And so I then went and tried to do what he was saying. And no, this takes practice, but this guy's an expert. That's why he's saying it doesn't, he thinks it doesn't, for him, it doesn't take any practice anymore after he's practiced it for 25 years or however long. So it takes repetition. This takes repetition. We sit in meditation again and again. We do walking meditation again and again. We take the precepts again and again, and we slip up. It's okay. These are training guidelines. When we slip up in the precepts, we retake the precepts. We do the chanting of the suttas. We read the suttas again and again. We listen to Dhamma teachings again and again, over and over. And we heard Lompo Samedo live today, so we may have heard a lot of his teachings online or followed his teachings for a period of time. But we need to hear it over and over again from many different angles for most of us. Another thing that was really stuck out for me for Lompo Samedo's teaching was how close it was to Ajahn Dunn's teaching when he came. And last time he was here, I believe it was 2016. And he talked about not knowing and knowing. So Lompo Samedo touched on that both today and in his talk he gave a week ago. He talked about not knowing and death. What is death? And then being with that sense of not knowing, rather than having comforting thoughts about death. Not that that's a bad thing or that that's not okay, but to really admit to ourselves we don't know. We haven't died yet, so we don't know. So that's that sense of not knowing, being comfortable with not knowing something. Usually we try to gain knowledge about something to feel more comfortable about it. But just being with that, not knowing. So being able to be fully content, fully comfortable with not knowing, and at the same time, cultivating knowing in terms of awareness, in terms of awareness of the present, here and now. So there's the knowing and the not knowing together. That sense of being okay, not having to acquire knowledge about something, but also being able to be fully aware in the present, along with that sense of not knowing. That's a really crucial point that Ajahn Dhan was talking about back in 2016. He really pointed to it many times as a very high Dhamma, a very important point in practice, being that being okay with not knowing. So when we're able to come back to awareness, we have that ability to become very deeply happy. So that's why we do this. That's why we're here. If there wasn't any rewards to this practice, if there wasn't any fulfillment that came from it, there's no way we can stay. You know, eventually, we'll leave. If there's no progress in the practice, or there's no sense of fulfillment from the practice, and we don't really get any of the fruits of the practice, we won't feel that gratitude. Remember last time Lungpur Viradhamo was here, he said, "I'm incredibly grateful. That's how I know the practice worked. If it didn't work, I wouldn't be grateful." It's very simple. So we can't just make ourselves feel gratitude. We can't make ourselves grateful. But when we receive the fruits, or the teaching works for us, then it's only natural that we'll feel gratitude. So if the practice isn't working for us, or we aren't able to get back to that sense of awareness, or there's a sense of inner discontent, dis-ease, and looking, investigating the precepts, is there something I can look at with the precepts? Is there some way I'm holding things that is leading to that sense of discontent, agitation? So if we feel unhappy, though, or we feel discontent, it doesn't mean the practice, doesn't necessarily mean the practice isn't working. We have to remind ourselves we can be aware of that as well. Sometimes we feel like, well, if I feel good, that means I'm with the Dhamma. But feeling good is just feeling good. So there's a teaching which really affected me. It's one of the suttas. Sometimes you just open up the suttas to a random page, and there's a teaching which is, you'll find, which is very profound, or just one line. This, I remember opening the suttas up and reading this. It's in the Samyutta Nikaya, where the bhikkhus ask the Buddha different questions about terminology. And they say, one bhikkhu says, "Apparent here and now, apparent here and now. How is the Dhamma apparent here and now?" And in this particular sutta, the Buddha answers, "When a thought of anger rises, he knows a thought of anger has arisen. That's how the Dhamma is apparent here and now." That's what apparent here and now is. It doesn't say, when a thought of anger arises, the Dhamma isn't apparent here and now, and when it goes away, it is. He says, when a thought of anger arises, he knows a thought of anger has arisen. That's how the Dhamma is apparent here and now. When a thought of anger doesn't arise, he knows the thought of anger has not arisen. That's how the Dhamma is apparent here and now. So it's just coming back to that awareness is incredibly, incredibly simple, but it, in a way it's too close, it's too easy, it's actually too simple. That's the problem. That's why we have a hard time with this. That's why it's hard to make progress in the practice, perhaps, or why it's hard to make progress in the cultivation of coming back to awareness. It's because it's too apparent here and now. It's too close. It's too what we are. Impermanence, the truth of impermanence, is what we are. These bodies, these minds, that's the truth of impermanence. It's not something outside. So totally internalizing the Dhamma, that's the opanayiko, to be brought in, to be internalized. We are the living Dhamma, all of us. It's not something in a book or something outside to be seen with a passing curiosity, but we are. The Buddha's teaching is pointing right to what we are. So I don't want to go on much longer than this because it's been a very long day, but it's also been a very good day, and I feel very inspired that all of you are here with the Sangha, and I feel very grateful that Longpo Sumedho is here with us. And so these are just a few thoughts to reflect on. I'll leave it there for this evening.